It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. We are right about at the one-third mark of the season, and so one of the big questions that sort of underlies everything the deeper we get into the season is what's real, what's kind of real, what's not real. There aren't a lot of stone flukes left at this point in the season, but there are a lot of things that we're not really sure, and that's going to be a lot of what we talk about today. So let's get on with it, and we start with somebody who definitely falls into that category of we're wondering how real it is, and that is Elvis Andrus. He has been really outstanding this year, 303, 32 RBI, 14 steals, 7 home runs. There is a lot to like here. With that said, in some ways it's not that different from what he did last year. The batting average is right in line. The home runs are up some, but his slugging isn't up that much, and his slugging on contact isn't up that much. So in some ways, he's kind of doing what he's always done. And so if you look at Elvis Andrus for the rest of the year, which is really what we're doing at this point, do you think he's the 7 home runs and 14 steals in a third of a season guy? Or do you think that he's probably for the rest of the year more what he's been in recent years or closer to what he's been in recent years? Fred, where are you on Elvis Andrus right now?
Yeah, I do think that overall Andrus for the last few years has been a little bit underrated in fantasy as far as just being someone who often can hit for average and get plenty of steals. I'm not really sold on the power. Like, if someone wanted to tell me he's going to hit 7 more home runs this year, I would say, okay, sure. But I wouldn't go any higher than that. Like, I'm not thinking like a 19 or 20 homer total at the end of the season. I think that with Andrus, what's happened, he's hitting high in the lineup, and he's one of those players who needs to either hit high or low in the lineup. Now that he's hitting high in the lineup, I could see him scoring, you know, 90, 95 runs this year, which then makes him pretty valuable. If he scores 90 runs and he steals overall, say, 30 to 35 bases, he's been kind of settling as a mid-20 steal guy, but we've seen him before. He has a 42 steal season. He has three seasons in the 30s. I'm willing to take him as a 30 to 35 steal player and someone who could score 90 runs and someone who could legitimately hit, you know, maybe not 300, but 280 or 290.
So let's talk about his place among shortstops and compare him to a couple of guys that, you know, at least from a fantasy perspective, I think it's safe to say have disappointed a little bit this year. Xander Bogaerts, hitting for a higher average, but fewer steals, fewer home runs, fewer RBI, right in line on the runs. Francisco Lindor, 263, more home runs, 12 homers so far, but nowhere near on the steals. Again, right in line on the runs. If you're looking at trading, and say you're looking at maybe cashing in on Andrus' hot start, would you rather have him than either of those guys? Where do you kind of tier him with some of these other guys that we had at the beginning of the year as tier one shortstops?
Yeah, I think I would still take the tier one shortstops over him. I would definitely take Lindor over him, even though the batting average has been low. Like, his BABIP is low. He is hitting more fly balls, so that makes a little bit of sense. But his home run pace is way up. Like, he might hit for a lower average this year, but also hit 28 or 29 home runs, which would be a big improvement for him. Now, he isn't stealing bases as much. So, I mean, I think I would take those younger guys with their upside. I do think Bogaerts is an interesting comparable in that Bogaerts will probably hit for a higher average, maybe driving more runs, but the runs scored are probably pretty similar, and Andrus will steal more bases. And with Bogaerts not hitting for power, I feel like I would take those other players just because I think their ceilings are higher than Andrus, but I wouldn't say someone was crazy if they said they would just rather have Andrus the rest of the way. What do you think?
Well, here's what I would say. I think it's a fair question, but here's what I would put to you. Andrus has 7 home runs this year. Bogaerts has 2. Who are you taking for home runs from today to the end of the year between those two guys?
Yeah, I would still take Bogaerts. Would you do the same?
I agree. And so, you know, I given that, it's hard for me. I'll put it this way. I would not trade, if I had one of the tier one guys, I would not trade them straight up for Andrus. Now, if you wanted to sweeten it, or there was some sort of piece you wanted, you know, you wanted to say, look, I want to cash in on this guy. we're viewing them very close, but there's some spare part that I could use that you don't have a use for. Yeah, okay, then I'd listen on something. Maybe we're talking an AL-only league where there's a piece that I could use. But I'm not parting with any Tier 1 shortstop as we identified them at the beginning of the year for Elvis Andrews right now in a one-for-one deal.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you're right. I think there are trade possibilities there where the Lindor owner says, hey, I believe in Andrus. I'll give you Lindor, you give me Andrus, and I could really use some more starting pitching depth. I'm going to get a useful starter, something like that. Or like you said, the Andrus owner, he or she wants to get out now. So you offer those one-for-ones and see if maybe an owner is a little frustrated with the low batting average from Lindor or the lack of power from Bogarts.
Staying with this same theme, we talk first baseman, and there are a bunch of guys having big years at first base that nobody really saw coming. Mark Reynolds, Travis Shaw, Justin Smoke, Yonder Alonso, Marwin Gonzalez, and Logan Morrison have all been really good. Some guys that we identified a little more highly at the beginning of the year, Chris Davis, Hanley Ramirez, Edwin Encarnacion, Matt Carpenter, not performing up to expectations. If we're looking from here to the end of the year, are any of the guys from the latter group that you're docking enough that you prefer any of the guys from the first group over them?
I'm not sure if I prefer them over them, but I may be close enough. A lot of people will ask me on Twitter, like, you know, what can I get in a trade for Justin Smoke? Or what can I get in a trade for Yonder Alonso? And often I'm kind of like, I don't know if you can get that much in a trade for them. I know they're playing well, but they don't have the name value. I'd say I'm sold enough on some of these players. You know, Reynolds hitting for the Rockies is a really nice situation for him. Travis Shaw for the Brewers is a nice situation. Smoke has made some really big adjustments this year. I'm sold enough on them that if I owned Travis Shaw and Matt Carpenter, I would be ready to trade Matt Carpenter for help at another position because I think Carpenter still has a lot more trade value than Travis Shaw. I'd be willing to trade Carpenter for help at another position and just roll with Shaw the rest of the way. I'm not sure if the difference will end up being large enough that I would really regret that. Do you think I'm on the right wavelength with that?
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, the guy in that category that I have and that I've been really happy with is Mark Reynolds, and I've thought, you know, a couple of times about getting out, but look, it's been a while, but he's done some of this stuff before. He's an enormous power guy. He has shown control of the strike zone before. He's playing in Colorado. You know, that's one of those guys from that bunch that I wouldn't be looking to get out from. I'm not looking to get out from.
I don't think you'll get enough for him to make it worth getting out.
Right, that's exactly the other thing is these guys, it's particularly at that position. You know, and guys who maybe aren't doing it all the way around, they're doing some things but not everything. I totally agree. I think that's the key is what are you going to get for one of those guys who, in a lot of cases, as recently as a week or two, we're still sitting on waiver wires. You know, the one guy, here's the other side of it is where I'm interested, is let's say you're in a really shallow league and one of those guys we just talked about is still on the waiver wire. And this may not be true, but it was true a week or two ago. You could still pick up some of those guys. Are we at a point with Hanley Ramirez where you might either trade him for nothing and pick up one of those guys, just trade him to clear the spot, or even drop him? I mean, you look at Hanley Ramirez's last, you go back 4 years. There's 1 year in the last four where Hanley Ramirez was a can't-drop guy for first base production. There's one. He's driven in more than 71 runs once since 2012. He's hit more than 19 home runs once since 2013. He scored more than 64 runs once since 2012. He's hit higher than 250. He's had 260 twice in the last 4 years. At what point do we acknowledge that Hanley Ramirez is just up here largely on name recognition?
That's right. You're right. And I think I'll give you a great example. Logan Morrison is still available in more than half of Yahoo leagues. So you could make that switch in a lot of 10-team leagues right now from Ramirez to Morrison. And owners will often make a little bit of a mistake where they'll think that the move is from Ramirez to Morrison, and it only partially is. What the move really is, it's giving up on Ramirez. So you're
right.
Saying, I'm done with Ramirez. I'm gonna take Morrison because he's among the MLB home run leaders. I'm going to ride this out and see where it goes, and I'm going to be constantly now looking to churn other players through that lineup spot. So it's not as people will be like, oh, who's going to be better, Hanley Ramirez or Logan Morrison the rest of the way? That's not totally the question. The question is Hanley Ramirez ever going to be so good the rest of the way that you're going to really regret dropping him? Because if you aren't, you can go to Morrison, and in 2 weeks you can go to someone else. I mean, Justin Bour was on this list until he went on the DL, and he was available in a ton of leagues a couple of weeks ago and then got red hot. It's your way of saying I'm going to cycle hot power hitters through that lineup spot instead of just waiting for Ramirez to come around. And I don't have a problem with that move, and it may even be with Chris Davis if someone doesn't want to wait around for him to come around.
I would have a harder time doing that with Davis just because we've seen better from him more recently. Davis is a guy, you know, even just a year ago, hit 38 home runs. 2 years ago, hit 47 home runs. Even this year, he's on pace for 35 or so. So, you know, you kind of take Davis going in knowing you're going to take the batting average hit. And so, you know, I think Davis can still, is currently and can still come closer to what your hopes and expectations are for him. Whereas Ramirez, at this point, I just think it's time to start looking at that one really good year as the outlier rather than sort of what we can expect from him.
Yeah, you're totally right. And Davis is the one where it's easy to envision the 12 homer month, and you're thinking, oh my gosh, I can't believe I got rid of him. But at the same time, if you're at your wit's end with Davis, the other thing an owner could do is say, I'm at my wit's end with Davis. I'll offer him to the owner of my league who's last in home runs for a third closer or something like that, and then I'll pick up Logan Morrison and go with him.
That's the thing. To some of those guys on that list, in your shallow mixed leagues, those guys in that second list, it's at the point where if you want to flip them for just something and pick up a decent replacement, that's reasonable. With that said, I would still be willing to be on a buy-low end of a Chris Davis trade. I would not be on a buy-low side of a Hanley Ramirez trade.
Yeah, and I'd be on the buy-low for Carpenter and Encarnacion as well.
Yep. We move on to Devin Travis, a personal favorite. Gregor Chisholm of MLB.com just wrote a heartbreaking story last night about how much work Travis has put in, and now he's hurt again. You know, I think that in a shallow mixed league, I would drop Travis, but in nearly any other league, I'm holding on to him because we saw again how good he can be when he's healthy. If you need the DL spot, okay, but if you can stash him, to me, I'm not parting ways with Travis because even after how much time he missed at the beginning of the year, he's still got to showing us what he's capable of this year.
Yeah, it's a frustrating case for sure. I tend to be in fantasy. I find the low man on Travis. I respect him as a ball player. I think he's one of those players who's a better real-life baseball player than a fantasy asset just because he doesn't put up the monster home run totals and the monster stolen base totals. So, and he has often is often hitting lower in the lineup. So I would drop him in 10-team leagues. I'm just going to assume that the DL is full in almost every fantasy team. There's just so many players on the DL. It didn't sound like this is a 2 or 3 week absence. Like, it sounded like it's going to be more significant than that. And he's been such a slow healer at times and recurring injuries. I would walk away in a 12-team league if it cost me a bench spot. Like, I would rather cycle hot starters or something like that through that bench spot.
I do think you make a good point, which is that the injury that he's dealing with does not sound like something that's just, you know, some injuries, you look at a guy, you look at a muscle strain, you look at even a broken bone. Some of these, you know it's going to heal. You're going to do the rehab, and in some set length of time, the body's going to heal. You look at this kind of, it's a knee cartilage injury. It just sounds tricky. It sounds like the kind of thing that could linger, and I think that's a good point. And I think that's one of the things we've talked about some. I think I talk a lot about kind of the nature of specific injuries, but I do think it's something you have to look at is this something where not just the player, but the injury itself is something that's sort of relatively finite. You know, it takes an amount of time to heal and the guy comes back, or is it something where it's tricky, it lingers, and that sounds like this kind of thing with Travis. So I do think that is a fair and relevant thing to consider. There is a lot of frustration with the Cubs. There is a lot of frustration with Chris Bryant. I look at Chris Bryant, and I see a guy who in a lot of ways is right on time. The RBI are low, and beyond that, he's down 19 points in batting average. He is right on pace on home runs. He's just a tick off pace in runs. He's actually ahead of his pace last year in stolen bases. And I know when you put this on here, you are almost certainly getting questions about it. And so my answer to any given question about Chris Bryant is, if somebody is frustrated, I'm in.
Yeah, 100% agree. I think he's maybe the best buy low out there because it's just the RBI total. Like, it's 26 RBIs, and we're more than a third of the way through the season. Like, I did not see that one coming at all. But as you said, like, the batting average is close enough. His on-base percentage is terrific. You know, swiping the odd base. And the home runs, I think the home runs, like you said, he's on pace for 37 home runs. That's totally fine. It's just getting overshadowed because we have these Justin Smokes and Logan Morrisons out there, you know, who are on pace for 40 homers, really surprisingly. So he's not standing out. I think, to me, he's still a top five fantasy hitter. I think the Cubs lineup will come around. I would be very surprised if we didn't see a real hot streak by him at some point this season and his teammates, where he has the 20 RBI and 20 run months and the seven homers in that month, the eight homers, that kind of thing. I think he's a great buy low right now.
I realize in fantasy nobody's playing with isolated slugging, but Bryant's isolated slugging is higher this year than it was last year. He's just fine. If somebody in your league, if you have an impatient Chris Bryant owner in your league, you should be talking to that person because you want in. Aaron Judge, on the other hand, has been spectacular. But, you know, maybe this is who he really is. Maybe Aaron Judge is a 45 home run guy. Maybe he is a legitimate MVP caliber player. There's nothing in his minor leagues record that indicates that he's that kind of player. It was not a given that he was going to make the team coming in. I think his upside is really high. I think we knew all along that he could be a really good power hitter, but there's nothing that indicates he's this kind of player. So that raises the question of, is he a sell high? And if so, what would it take? Fred, if you had Aaron Judge and you wanted to get out, not because you thought he was going to fall apart, but just because you thought he's at a peak value right now, what would it take for you to part with him?
Yeah, I mean, there's two ways that I see Judge regressing. I mean, first of all, his BABIP's 419. And, I mean, he hits the ball hard, but that's going to come down. So just batted ball luck, like, he's going to regress. Plus, there's also just the things that we have a harder time quantifying, where there is a cat-and-mouse game constantly going on in Major League Baseball between pitchers and batters, and pitchers are going to be working very hard right now at figuring out a better plan for getting Aaron Judge out. And I think there's fantasy owners right now who might trade their Chris Bryant for Aaron Judge. I mean, Judge is beating Bryant pretty much across the board in every category. I would be ecstatic if I was a Judge owner to cash out and pick up a Chris Bryant. If I needed steals, I would at least consider on Trey Turner. If I needed a shortstop, I would consider on maybe a Carlos Correa. I listed a couple others in our notes that I feel like I would be a little hesitant on, and those are Miguel Cabrera and Robinson Cano. And I don't, if I own Judge, I may just enjoy the ride rather than going for one of those veterans. What do you think?
I think that I think you tiered them right about where I was. The one guy that I might not be with you, and I think we learn week in, week out, that I probably undervalue steals. Excuse me, but I would have a hard time parting with Judge for Trey Turner.
No, I
love Trey
that.
Turner, and I just last week talked about how he was better than he looked, and I was sort of on the optimistic side. But, boy, I would really, just because the track record isn't long enough, I would have a hard time. I'd feel really dumb if I parted with Judge for Trey Turner and Trey Turner kept hitting 250 all year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a possibility. It's unlikely, but it's a possibility. You know, and a guy like Bryant, if I could get it, boy, you're right. If somebody actually was willing to do that, I would do that in an instant.
I might put it this way. If I could trade Judge for someone who, if we were drafting today for the rest of the season, I would still take in the first, say, two rounds, maybe even the third round, then I would be fine with trading Judge for that player. And I wouldn't take Cano in the first two rounds. And even though I think Miguel Cabrera is still a buy low because I think the price is way down right now, I don't know if I would take him in the second round. I don't think I would if we were drafting today. But I think that might be kind of my dividing line to think about it that way.
I think that makes a lot of sense. Scooter Gennett, 4 home runs last night because, of course, what is the format that exists where he is not already owned that you're adding him? Because I think that's a pretty narrow line right now.
Yeah, and I think the answer is none. I don't think I would pick up Jeanette in any mixed league, even a 15-team league. I just think it's a really cool story what he did last night. In an NL-only league, he's probably already owned. I guess in an NL-only league, if he wasn't owned, then maybe this would make me take a look at him. But that would be about it. I don't think that this is a sign of anything really to come. It's really cool that it happened. It's to imagine a four homer, 10 RBI game from a player who's on waivers in every mixed league.
Yep.
It's just really amazing, and we won't see that again for a while. But I'm not picking him up in any mixed league. Are you?
I might think about riding it for a while in a 15, but certainly nothing shallower than that. I mean, the thing I would note about him is that he did hit 14 home runs last year. He's playing regularly. It's not like he's useless. You know, he has eligibility at multiple positions. I could, like you said, if he's available in an NL only, I think it's probably worth picking him up. And I could see it. You know, I'm not looking for him. This is what I would say in like a 15 mixed. I'm not looking for him, but if I had a weak spot, if I just lost somebody and it was a little thin, I certainly wouldn't mind picking him up. It's probably where I'm at.
Yeah, I was looking at, like, when he had the game, I looked back and said, okay, did I miss this coming or something? And, we didn't. From May 29th until they started play in that game yesterday, he had had 21 plate appearances, one hit. And like going into that game, so from May 29th to June 5th. So, I mean, this is someone who wasn't really doing anything and then all of a sudden went off for one night. I think if you got it in an NL, if you got that in an NL-only league, just enjoy it and always remember it.
Greg Bird is close to returning. We don't have a lot to go on. Six games in the Florida State League, which on the one hand is a ball, but on the other hand is a tough place to hit. He's getting hits, though. He has not hit a home run, but again, it's not a great place to hit, so that's not all that shocking. You don't want to put too much stat. You really don't want to put any value on stats in a minor league rehab and A-ball. But we're looking for any clue, and the main thing is I think it's clear that the opportunity is there, and I think it's clear that that's a real good lineup to hit in. And what leagues are you looking to go ahead and pick up Bird, sort of sight unseen without seeing what he's able to do upon returning?
I think in a 15-team league, this is the time to grab him. In a 12-team league, probably not yet, and definitely not in a 10-team league. And I think it ties back into what we discussed earlier with there being all of these out-of-nowhere first basemen who have made the position now so far this season really deep. So, I mean, in a 10-team league, why not grab Logan Morrison, who is playing and is playing well, before you go and speculate on Bird? In a 15-team league, I'd speculate. In a 12-team league, I don't know if I'd grab him yet, but I would be ready to pounce if I saw something encouraging.
We move on to starting pitchers, and Edson Volquez had obviously a no-hitter, but also just a great story. It meant a lot to him. It was cool to see. I'm still burned after taking a chance on him in some deeper formats earlier this year. I'm not buying it. I could see it in a deep league if you want to take a flyer, because we knew something like that was in there. It wasn't like they signed a guy who had been awful last year. Are you intrigued, or do you need to see more before even starting to stream him in deeper leagues?
Yeah, I'm not interested. I mean, looking at his season overall, he's 2-7. He has 33 walks in 61 and two-thirds innings. His whip is 1.38, and that's with that start, involved in it. Even in a 15-team league, if he was dropped, I would think hard before picking him up. So it also, like Scooter Gennett, like, awesome story, but doesn't change who he is to me as far as fantasy going forward.
Tanner Roark had two very good starts and then a kind of shaky one, but I think even that was encouraging. He's gone at least 7 and 3 straight starts. He has not walked more than 1 in 3 straight starts. So even though those 4 runs last time out, given what he had been doing, I think it's kind of encouraging, because there were some things that had been bad that weren't bad. You look at his last 3 starts, total 18 strikeouts, 2 walks, 21 and two-thirds innings. Starting to look like the guy we were hoping for earlier in the year. Is this an opportunity to deal Roark while you can, or is this an opportunity to maybe pick up a guy that somebody hasn't noticed has gotten right? What's your read on Roark right now?
Yeah, I would maybe consider dealing him if you could off the hot streak. I will admit to being typically the low man on Roark as well, because his strikeout rate's typically pretty low, and his whip's usually not great. Like, it's just okay. Now, I do like I tend to like owning a pitcher on the best teams in the National League. I think that's a nice spot to be in. So for that reason, I think he should be owned in all leagues. But if he strung together another good start or two, I think I would look at dealing him. Owners shouldn't really trade for wins, but if he starts racking up 7-8 wins, maybe an owner who's low in wins, you can trade him away for more than he's worth. So, yeah, I don't think I would rush out to get him yet. I don't see anything to me that suggests that he's going to be, like, really great. And I did think last year he outpitched. He did outpitch his peripherals last year.
He's done that often enough that I think it's fair to ask whether that's whether he's one of those guys who does that. My issue with Roark is I feel like he's a full hold in all directions. I don't think you go out to get him unless you just kind of need, unless your pitching staff is just in shambles and you need reliable. But I'm not sure you can get any real value for him. So I think if you've got him, he's another one of those guys, and I think I talk about this a lot, where you knew what you were getting into. You know, if you drafted Roark, you weren't expecting 220 strikeouts. You weren't expecting a 1-0 whip. You were expecting innings, a good ERA, and figuring you'd probably get some wins. So I to me, Roark is a full hold right now.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, yeah, and where you value him might depend on going way back to the beginning of the podcast that, you know, maybe you're doing the Elvis Andrus for Francisco Lindor trade and you're looking at the other person's pitching staff. Well, if the Andrus owner throws in Roark, does that put it over the top? That might be the kind of place where you decide if you want to pick him up or pick a different member of that staff. Is Roark the guy you like, kind of thing?
David Price's first start, he was very encouraged. The results were fine but not great, but he really liked what he did. His second start was very encouraging. Seven innings, one run, seven Ks, one walk against the Orioles. Are you willing to say that David Price is David Price, or do you still need to see more?
For me, I still need to see more, and I do own Price in one of my leagues. I actually made a lot of attempts to trade him away just prior to that first start, and nobody was buying. And I wasn't asking really for the moon for him. I was treating him kind of like a high end number two, like 15th, 20th best starter, that kind of thing. And nobody was biting on that. So I just held, and I've been using him, and I'm going to continue using him, obviously. But if I could even get those offers now, I would probably still take the ones I was looking at a couple weeks ago. I still think there's some lingering concern there, going back to the fact that he was inconsistent last season. Like, this isn't Madison Bumgarner when he comes back. And if he has a couple nice starts, I'll be willing to say, like, this is an ace going forward. For Price, I would have needed to see more than two starts, even if he was healthy on opening day, after him having a 3.99 ERA last year.
I maintain full skepticism at all times on pretty much all Rocky starters. Jeff Hoffman has had two very good starts in a row, like really, really good starts in a row, and has 26 strikeouts and two walks in four appearances this year. Okay, that's great. Jeff Hoffman also did that his last two starts against the Phillies in Philly, which is a good place to pitch, but is not Coors, and against the Padres in San Diego, which is basically the best matchup that exists for a pitcher. I am not buying. I expect that I just don't. I don't trust it. I don't trust unproven pitchers in Coors Field. I'm just not willing to be the person who wears it when it goes bad. Do you like him any more? Will you argue with me, or will you just say, yeah, until I see it, I don't believe it?
Yeah, I think where I can see a use for Hoffman right now, I agree. I typically just don't own the Coors Field pitcher, and when I've gone away from that philosophy in my time playing fantasy baseball, I've usually regretted it. I think I've almost always regretted it. But I will say that there are so many pitcher injuries and so many people are scrambling to just fill their spot that I could pick up Hoffman and say I'll use him for road starts only. And I am interested in doing that right now if I have enough roster depth to go in that direction. But I would to use him at home, it would have to be against a team like the Padres.
Yep. Steven Matz apparently close to a return. Any expectations at all? I mean, I just kind of feel like if you held on to him, sure. But he is kind of a unicorn right now. I got to see it before I believe it.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely injury-prone for sure, but he did make 22 starts last year. So it's not like he's someone who, to me, he's not on, say, like the Brett Anderson level of pitchers who have year after year of maybe not even getting to 10 starts, and once in a blue moon they have a nice year. But I'm kind of intrigued by Matz, just, again, because there's such a premium right now on useful starting pitching. Maybe in some leagues the Matz owner is already doing quite well with their starting pitching, and there's an opportunity there to get him still at a decent discount because of that injury cloud that will linger over him probably for the rest of the season. So I think for for people who need to turn around a pitching staff but don't want to trade for Chris Sale or Max Scherzer, not that he'll be that good, maybe you can get Matt still a little bit on the cheap right now and just cross your fingers that you get. He has a career 3.16 ERA, so there's plenty of upside there.
Trevor Bauer, possibly the most maddening pitcher in fantasy baseball, because even when he's bad, he can strike guys out, and then he can be really good, and then, boy, can he be bad. Is he more than a stream option for you at this point?
No, I think stream option, though, is appropriate, and I'm not sure if some owners have picked that up, because he has a 5.83 ERA and a 1.40 whip. So I think some owners will look at him even with all the strikeouts and say, forget it, I'm not touching anything with a 5.83 ERA. But his FIP's 3.98, so that's more reasonable. He hasn't had great batted ball luck this year. But as you said, this isn't a good pitcher who's had bad batted ball luck. This is someone who, as you said, is maddening. If I'm struggling in strikeouts, then I think I would use him as a streaming option or just close my eyes and roll him for a few starts and see what happens. But I think he'll be better from a ratios perspective than he has been, but I also don't think that he'll continue to have an 11.2 K per nine rate the rest of the way. But if it settles in the nines, that's still pretty useful. Yep. 15 team leagues, I'm using him. 12, the matchup would have to be good.
And I think the one thing is there are some good matchups in the AL Central, so mm-hmm. You can watch it and see. If he makes a start at Kansas City, that's worth paying attention to.
Mm-hmm.
One last question about starting pitchers, and it's a philosophical question. We talked about this with the Cubs last year. It's even more pronounced because we're talking about the DH league. How good does a starter have to be before you are comfortable starting him against the Astros?
I think they have to be, say, on your rotation, probably top three. I think if it's not one of your three best starters, then I would probably sit them. So that maybe gives it a little bit more something that everyone can use in every league. Because it doesn't, if they're not one of your top three starters, maybe sit them against the, unless your pitching staff's really loaded, then maybe sit them against the Astros. They have a really tough mix right now. Like, we usually run away from the teams that are scoring the most runs, and that makes sense, and they're that team. But beyond that, their strikeout total as a team is one of the lowest in baseball. So you're not even, it's not even a situation where you're like, okay, well, even if my pitcher gives up three or four runs, he might get eight strikeouts, seven strikeouts. Like, that's highly unlikely. And then their pitching staff has a couple really good members in it, and then has a terrific bullpen. So even if you're getting them on the Mike Fiers day, there's nothing to say that Fiers gives up three runs in five innings, and then here comes that nice relief core, and it's hard to get a win against them. So I think it's got to be one of your top three starters.
We will move on to closers in just a bit. Before we do, we want to take a moment to tell you about the Cut Forecast. The Cut Forecast is the podcast from the staff of MLB.com's Cut 4 section, which focuses on the lighter side of baseball. If you've made it this far with us, we think you might really enjoy the Cut Forecast as well. It will make you laugh, and you might learn something about baseball, dogs, or ballpark food. Last week, MLB.com's Nationals reporter Jamal Collier join the Cut Forecast to break down Bryce Harper's brouhaha with the Giants and declare a winner in the most important battle of the whole episode, Bryce's hair versus Mike Morse's hair. That sounds like something you're into, search Cut Forecast, C-U-T, the number 4, C-A-S-T, in iTunes or wherever else you get your podcast, and click subscribe. And now back to the 411. Ken Giles is closing for baseball's far and away best team thus far. He also has a 4.24 ERA and a whole bunch of guys who probably have the ability to close. Is there anywhere in the back of your head that you might be nervous about Giles holding on to his job?
Yeah, I am a little nervous just because they have so many good options. And, and they went through multiple closers last season. I'm not sure exactly. I think they would go back to Will Harris, maybe. That's obviously the next question here. Is if it wasn't Giles, who would it be? And Harris, to me, is the guy who's the combination of, he's had a little closer experience, he's pitching well this year, he's a veteran, he's right-handed. It doesn't mess up really the rest of the bullpen to go to Harris. Like, Gregerson hasn't really pitched that well overall this year. I don't think they go to a James Hoyt or a Chris Devensky. I'm not that worried. Like, I'm not worried enough that I'm racing out to trade Giles, but it would be enough for me to maybe not want to trade for him. And typically, I would love to own the closer on the best team in baseball. How do you feel about him? Like, what do you think the odds are that he's still their closer, say, in a month?
Well, the one thing I would say is that those changes don't tend to happen when teams are going well.
That's true.
That's one of those things. Even if he's struggling, you don't often see a team that is just running over everybody make that kind of change, because it's a hard one for a manager to make. You know, it's something that you don't want to do if you don't have to. Managers get comfortable with the way they're doing things. So, you know, if things get scary for the Astros, if that division suddenly got interesting again, or if they lost a bunch of games as a result of it. But I suspect that in the absence of that, the way it gets handled is, we believe in Ken, he's our guy, hey, we're still winning games, right? And that's how that goes. Now, the Astros are a little more forward-thinking from some other organizations, and I could see them adjusting it somehow or subtly changing things without making a full change. I could see some of that, but until and unless it really starts costing them in the standings, I would be surprised to see a change there.
Yeah, I agree. And we talked about manager. We've often talked about managers keeping the locker room, and you know that, like, as long as the Astros are largely winning, they can handle the odd blown save by Giles, and the locker room's probably fine. They're not worried about missing the postseason yet or anything like that. So he would probably have to have more struggles than a closer on a team that's really struggling to really stay in the race. There may be a little more panic in the locker room and desire to go away from him. Plus, I think we both agree that Ken Giles is a good pitcher. This isn't Fernando Rodney struggling.
Right. And you know, one thing I've talked about before, he looks like a closer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not a guy throwing changeups. He's bringing gas. And again, while the Astros are a forward-thinking club, managers tend to be managers. And I have an unproven but deeply held theory that guys who do it by looking like a closer get more rope than guys who do it with off-speed stuff.
Yeah, and although the Astros have a lot of options for the ninth inning, they don't have that one, like, Dellin Betances-type option. Like Will Harris lost the job last year. Luke Gregerson, you know, lost the job last year and hasn't pitched very consistently this year. Devenski, Hoyt, pitchers like Feliz, they're unproven at a role like that. So they don't have that really obvious, okay, this, when Giles blows two more saves, this is the guy you go to.
Yep. A couple more closers we want to talk about. One more guy who maybe a little precarious after his most recent game, Tony Watson. 10 saves right now. If I tell you he gets 15 more the rest of the year, are you over or under on that?
I'm going to go under. I'm definitely worried about him. I would want to own Felipe Rivero in any league. There is also a chance that Watson could be traded. A contender, even if Watson isn't pitching great, a contender could look at him and say, hey, I'm putting him back in that lefty specialist role, and he should be dynamite there. So between the trade possibility and the lose his role in the near future possibility, he's even a guy who could, he wouldn't lose his trade value if they removed him from the closer's role, put him back into a lefty specialist role, and then he thrived. Like, often relievers would lose their trade value if they're pulled out of that closer's role. I don't think that's the case with him.
And Fernando Rodney, who continues to be scary but continues to rack up saves for a team that's winning games. Again, same number. If I give you 15 more to the end of the year, he's at 14 right now. Over, under?
I have to go under. It's getting close, though.
Would
you go over? Like, he could get 15 almost by the trade deadline. Like,
that's the thing. He could get 15 and not hold the closer's job to the end of the year. So I think it's a good number. But I also find it hard to believe that he holds that job all year, except that he still has with a 6 ERA.
I know, and with the Diamondbacks winning, like at the beginning of the year, I think a lot of people weren't expecting the Diamondbacks to contend, so the general theory was, hey, if he's pitching well, he's going to get traded in July, and if he's pitching poorly, you don't want him anyways. There is that one window now where he handles the role just well enough, and they stay in the race, and they just decide to go with him, and if they trade for relievers, it's to set him up. So it's possible. Like, there is a really weird way where somehow Fernando Rodney could have 35 or 40 saves this year, and that would be very memorable if it happens.
It is true. And we will close out with the two start pitchers, and there are some guys I like quite a lot. Mike Foltynewicz at Washington, home for Miami. Wade Miley at the White Sox, home for St. Louis. John Lackey at the Mets and Pirates. Kyle Freeland at Pittsburgh and home for San Francisco. CeCe Sabathia at the Angels and A's. Jared Eichhoff at Boston and home for Arizona. Luis Perdomo, home for Cincinnati and at Milwaukee. I'm not sure there's a guy in here where I really hate it. I like Eichhoff, but hate the matchups and don't particularly like him this year. I think the guys that stand out to me are Foltynewicz, who's just a guy I like and is getting it together. Even with those matchups are tough, I like him for a week. I love the matchups for Lackey. And I love the matchups for Sabathia, even though I don't entirely trust the pitcher. Who jumps out to you from that list?
Yeah, I agree with you on Sabathia. He might be my favorite one or close to it on the list, just those two road starts against the Angels and the A's. Yeah, I could not bench Lackey. I know he's been inconsistent this year, but at the Mets and at the Pirates. On top of that, I think Perdomo's okay. Like, he has that home start against the Reds. That's nice. And then the road start, he gets so many ground balls that he's not quite possibly as park impacted as some other pitchers. So a road start against the Brewers could be okay. I wouldn't touch Eichhoff. He's just not pitching well enough right now, and yep. Those two lineups are tough. And Kyle Freeland, I would not want to own, and we just talked no Rockies, et cetera, et cetera. But at Pittsburgh is a really nice matchup. And if you're going to take them in a Coors Field, like at home to the Giants is about as good as it gets this year. Like, they're one of the lowest scoring teams in baseball.
All right. That's the Fantasy 411 for this week. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Fred Zinke, for taking the time to talk. Talk to you again next week.